Starting hour number three, what's going on? We are moving right through it, having a good Tuesday. Don't forget, I will be at Torrey Pines tomorrow for the Farmers Insurance Open. I will be in Miami next week for the Super Bowl. I will be in Dallas before then for the O'Reilly Managers Convention. Lots going on. This program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. As promised, we are joined right now by a senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com. He is an analyst on the Pick Six podcast. He is a good friend of the program. He is Pete Prisco. Pete, how are you?
Good, Romy. How are you? You warmed up yet?
You know I'm starting right there, Pete. You know I'm going to start right there. From a California guy to a Florida guy, Pete, you and I can relate. You were in Kansas City. I was in Kansas City. Can you explain to everybody just how freaking cold it was?
What was it? Carbone from Goodfellas who was frozen in the truck? That's what we were on Sunday. That's exactly what we were. My face, it took about 3 hours after the game for my face to start being normal again. It was ridiculous. That was as cold as I've been. I remember I was at the Packers-Giants playoff game a couple years ago, and that one was really cold, but I didn't have to stand outside as much as we did the other day. It was brutal.
It was brutal. Pete, explain this to me. Like, I understand that liquor has got something to do with it. I understand that you've got Florida blood. I've got California blood. But I'm walking around that stadium, and I'm like, these people, not only do they not seem as frozen as you and I, they don't seem unhappy. In fact, they seem really happy, and they don't even seem cold. How do you explain it?
Well, yeah, you're right. Liquor had something to do with it. We were there at 9 o'clock. I mean, I think you were there right there before us at 8 or something. You walked through the parking lot. The gates opened. They had a waiting line to get in at 6 for some of those cars. And they have these, you know, fires and grills and everything else. I've been around this league for a long time. Those people deserve all the credit in the world for standing out there the way they did the other day. It was incredible.
No, they were thrilled. Pete Prisco is joining us. So when I got off the airplane, Pete, and we're going to talk football in a minute, but when I got off the airplane, the guy who picked me up at the airport said, man, you are lucky. Like, nobody can get in. I said, really? It was no problem at all. How about you? What was your trip to Kansas City like?
I was supposed to go on Friday. The flight was canceled because of the weather. Couldn't get in that night. Everything else was booked going in on Saturday. So I had to fly through Houston to Wichita and then drive to Kansas City 3 hours through the flattest land I've ever seen in my entire life. And it was capped off by getting a ticket, a speeding ticket in Kansas.
Oh, dude. Unbelievable. How fast were you going?
I was going 89 in a 70.
Okay.
Probably deserved it.
Okay, we were trying to get there. You were frustrated. Did you say to the cop, you know who the hell I am? Did you try that? Did you throw that card?
No, I didn't pull that card. I tried to tell him, look, I explained my day, what happened, and he went to the car and came back. And he goes, here's your ticket. Didn't work.
Nice try. Pete Prisco joining us. He's a senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com. All right, so let's talk some football. Before the AFC Championship game, you expected the Chiefs would take care of business against the Titans. So what was going through your mind when Tennessee jumped on them early 10-0 and then 17-7?
Well, having been there the week before, I think I sat there and I said, okay, this is the exact same type of game. If any team can come back from this type of deficit and this type of start, it was the Chiefs. I mean, look, they can score on anybody. And one thing about Andy Reid, once he gets going, he doesn't take the foot off the pedal. He just keeps going and going and going. And I think that's the greatness of that offense. It helps that you have Patrick Mahomes. But I wasn't worried for the Chiefs. I thought the Titans were, you know, limited in terms of what they could do offensively, and I knew the Chiefs would eventually get it going, and they did.
We're talking to Pete Prisco. Like, they might have been limited offensively, but we saw Tennessee beat Houston, New England, and Baltimore, and each of those teams knew what Tennessee wanted to do, which was pound Derrick Henry, but they could not stop it. What was Kansas City able to do that those other teams weren't?
Well, they didn't allow them to get going. And, you know, that's the one thing when you talk to the Chiefs players before that game, they said, look, we can't allow him to get the head of steam. If you can bounce him and make him move a little bit, not get, you know, chop his feet a little bit, then you win. Because once he gets in the open field, big guy, fast guy, it's going to be a problem. And they did a good job of making him chop his feet a little bit and bounce. And I think that was the key to what they did on defense. Chris Jones being in there, and he was limited in what he could do, but just having him in there was big for that defense as well.
So, Pete, overall, the Kansas City defense, how do you think it compares to where it was earlier in the season and maybe with other Kansas City defenses in Andy Reid's time there? What's the difference?
Well, I think they're much better than early in the season because guys are healthy. You know, early in the season, Chris Jones wasn't around, and he's not all the way back yet, but he was a pretty good force on the plays he did play. Frank Clark was hurt early in the season and then got sick. They didn't have Suggs, who Suggs is limited now in terms of his ability to rush the passer, but he's still a really good run player and a tough guy to, you know, move off the point. And I think defensively those linebackers are playing better. Add it all up, and they're much more, you know, athletic as a defense. They're faster, and they're playing faster. And Steve Spagnuolo's defense can be tough on a young group, and I think they've adjusted to it.
Pete Prisco breaking it down for us. And then you've got Patrick Mahomes, who did pretty much what we'd expect and maybe even more. But if we were to go back, Pete, to when he was drafted, you were all over it at that time, and you said that he would be the best quarterback in that draft. What did you see from him at Texas Tech? Reem Mahomes himself said, look, there wasn't a whole lot of winning there. But what did you see from him there that made you feel that way?
That gunslinger mentality, the arm, the ability to make all the throws, the ability to throw it from different, you know, launch points, which is important. We've seen that carry over to the NFL. And, you know, he reminded me of Favre in that he would take the shots. And I talked to Andy Reid about that last year. I said, Andy, he's a lot like Favre, and he coached him. And he said, yeah, he is. And I said, well, Favre threw a lot of interceptions. And he looked at me, he paused, he said, yeah, but he threw a lot of touchdown passes too. And Andy Reid's okay with that. And this guy doesn't throw a lot of interceptions. He hasn't thrown any in the postseason. He's phenomenal, and I think he's only, you know, scratching the surface. When it's all said and done, this kid might end up being the best quarterback in the history of this league game, saying a lot.
I think you're right. I mean, I think there's a possibility to that, and I think unlike Favre, nothing against Brett Favre. Brett Favre is Brett Favre, but I think that, like, Mahomes has figured out things already that Favre may have never figured out. He's cut way down on his mistakes already. Now, your other pick, Pete, on Sunday did not work out as well. You kind of have a bit of a rep now, Pete, for picking against San Francisco. What kind of game were you expecting from the Packers on Sunday, and then what do you make of how they actually showed up?
Well, they got trampled, and there's nothing worse than being a defense and having your manhood taken away by 288 rushing yards. That was awful. And I give all the credit in the world to Kyle Shanahan and Mike McDaniel, the run game coordinator. They schemed up a heck of a game. We know Mike Pettine. Mike Pettine wants to get you in third down and get little and attack. And they attacked him. And they ran on third down. And they were just pushing guys off the line of scrimmage. It was a great game plan. I thought the Packers would be able to get some points early and kind of put the pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo. It didn't happen that way. And I give all the credit to San Francisco and all those 49er fans. They're nasty. I never knew the 49er fans to be that nasty, but they've been all over me, Jim.
Pete Prisco joining us, right? I feel you. Now, you and I have talked, on the other hand, you and I have talked a number of times about the fact that you are not a fan of drafting a running back in the first round because there are a lot of good running backs out there. Knowing that, how much were you smiling as Raheem Mostert rushed for 220 yards and four TDs?
That was fantastic. I mean, and give the kid credit for persevering and coming through everything he's come through, getting cut six times, and then doing what he did in that game. And he's an explosive runner. And so, yeah, you can find those guys anywhere. And look, the 49ers tried to address the position. They tried to get, you know, they paid McKinnon a lot of money. It hadn't worked out. They tried to get Le'Veon Bell. Didn't get him. That's a blessing in disguise. And now you just run these guys. And it doesn't matter who's in there. Breida, Coleman, you know, Mostert, the line is playing outstanding, the scheme is great, and those guys run. Don't draft running backs in the first round. Don't pay running backs big money.
Pete Prisco helping get us ready for the Super Bowl. Hey, Pete, before you go, if you're Kansas City, how concerned are you about that Niners defense, and what concerns you the most about that group?
Well, you know, one thing that people lost sight of the other day in the Kansas City game was how well their offensive line played, because that's a group that had some injuries early in the season. They still are starting a backup left guard. But they played really well, and I think that's going to be the key. Because I've always said this, if you can block them, you'll beat them. I know Richard Sherman's a heck of a corner. He's a guy that, you know, excels in the postseason. But if you block them, you beat them, and I think that's going to be the key. Can, you know, those guys, Schwartz and Fisher, hold up against the pass rushers on that team? That's a big defensive line with big guys who can rush the passer. That's going to be quite a challenge. The other thing, too, Jim, Mahomes can move, and he's just scary. You saw that long laser throw he made to Sammy Watkins on the move. I think that's a big advantage for him and the Chiefs.
So, Pete, what about Richard Sherman you mentioned? If you're San Francisco's defense, how do you go about dealing with Kansas City's offense, and how worried are you about the side that is not covered by Sherman?
You know, it's interesting. They play a lot of cover three, and it, you know, it's got away from playing it exclusively, which, you know, that's the old Seattle defense and what a lot of teams have done. Gus Bradley did it when he took it to the Chargers and when he was with Jacksonville, but they've gotten away from playing most of that all the time. They do a lot of different things now. But I'll tell you what, if you look at some of the success that Gus Bradley at with the Chargers has had against Patrick Mahomes, he's been, you know, one of those guys that played a lot of cover three and made him be patient. And, you know, big arm throwers like that don't like being patient. So I think San Francisco will play a lot of cover three and make Patrick Mahomes check it down and be patient. If you could do that and limit the big plays, then I think they have a legitimate chance to win the football game.
Pete Prisco, my guest. And finally, Pete, I don't suspect that it's going to happen, but if the 49ers need to pass, and they certainly didn't have to this past weekend, but if they do need to pass, how do you think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to fare against that Chiefs defense? Like, if they need him to make plays to win the Super Bowl, do you think that he will and can?
Well, it depends. Are they running it or not? Because everything I think he does in the passing game is predicated on their ability to run the ball. That's the greatness of Kyle Shanahan. He gets you going one way, and then you throw back the other way. How many times have we seen Kittle slip out on the other side, the backside of the play wide open? How many times have they slipped the fullback out over the years on the backside of the play wide open? You get him flowing one way, and you throw back the other way. He's great at doing that. He's also become a pretty good in the middle of the field thrower on those, you know, slants to Debo and those slants to Sanders. So I think he's capable of doing it. If he has to drop back and just, you know, down by, you know, 20 in the third quarter and just start chucking the ball over the place, I don't think that's a good look for him. But if they can run the ball and he can throw it, I think then he gets more than capable of making plays.
So, Pete, it's early, but you're already all over this. Are you ready for a pick? Like, if it's San Francisco plus two, who do you like?
You know, I haven't decided yet, but I'm leaning to the Chiefs. And, you know, I've heard people say that this reminds them of the Broncos-Seahawks Super Bowl when the Broncos had all the points and putting up big numbers, and Seattle went in there and just dominated them from start to finish. I don't see it that way. I think Mahomes can move well enough to get away from the pressure. My early lean is to the Chiefs, but I'm not so sure. I might not change that one.
So, San Francisco fans,
leave me alone.
Dude, come on, be real. Is that why you just said that? Because you know they're coming for you again? You don't care about that.
No, I don't care about that.
You don't care about that. You don't care about that. You're Pete Prisco, man. Senior NFL columnist for CBSSports.com, an analyst on the Pick Six podcast, friend of the program, and it was cold. Pete Prisco. Pete, I will look for you in Miami. Great job. Thanks so much.
You got it, Jim. See you down there.
You got it. I was so happy to see Pete that day because I'm like, we're the only ones. He's a Florida guy. I'm a California guy, and we're not afraid to admit at this point in our lives, damn, man, we're cold. We are really cold. It's really cold here. And the next Chiefs fan that I see will be the first that I'll think was actually cold. Man, they seemed happy as hell until they fell behind early on. And then it got really cold, right? Again, if you weren't listening yesterday, it was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. We, as part of the CBS crew, as Pete said, I got there probably an hour before him. Our crew was in the car at 7:30, and we wanted to be at the stadium at 8 o'clock. The game started at 2 o'clock, the show started at 12 noon, and we wanted to be there at 8. When we pulled up around 7:45 to Arrowhead, there was already a line snaking all the way down the mountain, all the way down the hill. There had to have been people in line for hours to get inside the gate at 8 to party for 6 hours prior to a game. And you just don't understand how cold it was. I mean, to say that it was 12 degrees does not begin to do it justice. That wind was kicking up. That wind made it feel like minus 30. I've been in cold weather. I've been in 0-degree temperatures. I've been in sub-0-degree temperatures. For some reason, that Kansas City cold, I think probably because I was outside longer than I normally am when it's that cold, I've never been so cold. Like, it was hard to think. It was hard to speak. It was hard to function. And yet, Chiefs fans, again, that's not where I live. That's not what I do. But Chiefs fans were happy as hell. Nobody seemed miserable. And some of the crew and I were walking around like, what is with these people? Why are they not pissed? Why are they not angry? Yeah, I know they were on the verge of doing something they had never done in 50 years. I know they had liquor, and I had none of that. But I was just awed. Awed by the fans at KC. And I've been getting things both on and off the air from adults crying that they're going, that they never thought this would happen. And, of course, the very obvious, hey, Van Smack, I know this is not easy, but do you have a line on tickets? A Super Bowl ticket is so hard to get. It really is. And the sad thing about this is I'm not looking to bite the hand that feeds because I have a lot of relationships and partnerships. I got to be very real about this, and it's kind of unfortunate. Like, if you're a Chiefs fan and you want to go to that game because you've been waiting 50 years and you're crying and you want to share it with your kids and everybody's crying, it's a really challenging thing, right? like, I hate to say it, it's not a game for fans. It's a game for corporate America. These are really hard tickets to get. And if you don't have that tie-in or that hookup or that relationship, you can get a ticket, but it's going to cost you a hell of a lot of money. Lots and lots and lots of money. People will find a way to go. I'm just saying it's a really challenging thing. I can't say to you, oh, I got a hookup. I don't. So to all my friends and family and colleagues, VanSmack is not wired for it. I would love to help you out, but it's almost impossible. It's that hard to get tickets because that happens every year, no matter who goes. All right, so we're coming right back. 1-800-636-8686. Phone lines are open. When we return, I want to talk about Kyle Shanahan, and I want to talk a little Jungle Racing. We haven't done that in a minute or so. Finally, the Jungle Silks. We're back in the winner's circle, and there's a really good story behind that I want to share. How often do you think about your socks? If you're like I used to be, probably not very often. I recently discovered socks that changed the way I'll think about my socks forever, and they're called Bombas. Bombas are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. They're made from premium cotton. Bombas stay warm in the wintertime and cool in the summer, and every pair comes with a built-in blister tab, innovative arch support, stay-up technology, and a seamless toe. And with so many colors, patterns, lengths, and styles, Bombas look great in the gym, at the office, and out and about on town. Bombas are what your feet daydream about. And with every purchase you make, Bombas donates a pair to somebody in need. So keep cool, keep comfortable, and keep contributing with the best socks in the history of feet. Bombas. Buy yours at bombas.com/Jim Rome and get 20% off your first purchase. B-O-M-B-A-S. bombas.com/Jim Rome and take 20% off your first time purchase. bombas.com/Jim Rome.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Whenever work gets done, Grainger is there with the industrial supplies, safety products, and time-saving services that you need to keep your business running smoothly. See for yourself when you visit Grainger.com. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. All right, hit me up. You know where to find me. Still banging telephone calls. So it's been a minute or two since I talked about Jungle Racing on the program. The Jungle Racing stable. We're not nearly as involved in the game as we used to be, but we still are. And we still have some racing interests, and we still have parts of horses. And then we have one horse that is a Jungle Racing horse through and through. So it's been a minute or two since I've talked about it on the program, but yesterday was a really special day. Any day we have a horse running is a special day, but especially in the case of a filly by the name of Gigetta that we have. Because Gigetta is family. Like back in the day when we were buying horses, we would buy them at auction. They're sales. And we dabbled in breeding our own, but we don't have an extensive or expansive breeding operation. In fact, we have like one mare at this point. So Gigetta is a Jungle Racing homebred, meaning we own her mother. Her mother is a horse that we owned that never ran. And we own that horse, and then you find a stallion to breed to, and then you get the baby, i.e. a homebred. And the mare, the mother, is a horse named Gidget Girl, and Gidget Girl's mother was Surfer Girl. So Gidgetta's grandmother, follow along, is Surfer Girl. We purchased Surfer Girl more than a decade ago, and Surfer was one of our first big swings in the game. Long before Misdirection and before its Share Belief, we bought Surfer Girl, and I'm not afraid to say it. I love that horse deeply. I love them all. I love the horse deeply. And Janet would say things like, all you do is talk about that horse. All you do is take pictures of that horse. Do you have any pictures of me and the boys? Love the horse. But Surfer got really sick. She had pneumonia and never had the chance to be the runner that we thought she would be. So we retired her. We began to breed her, and we had more bad luck. Like, it was just one heartbreak after another. There's so many stories. I'm not going to bore you with the details, but literally, we couldn't catch a break. Nothing good was happening. Nothing. Nothing with Surfer, nothing with her babies, nothing good. Just bad luck. But we never gave up on the family, and Gigetta is the daughter of Gidget Girl, who is the daughter of Surfer Girl, and Gidgetta is the first one to actually make it to the races in the family. So that in and of itself is a win. No matter what she does, no matter what happens in a race, the fact that we actually got one of these babies to the races was a win. So she made her debut at Del Mar. And people who are in the game will argue about this. People in Kentucky argue for Kentucky. People who are in Florida will argue for Saratoga. Or I should say New York will argue for Saratoga. You know, I'm a California guy. I'm going to argue for Del Mar being the best spot. So she made her Gidgetta made her debut at Del Mar in late November. Ran against a really strong field. And she ran well. She was in a really tough maiden race. Maiden race being her first race. And she ran third. But was running really well late. And she, quote, outran her odds. 16-1. So we were really pleased and really proud that our little Jungle Racing homebred hit the board at Del Mar against a field that included some really expensive horses. We were really proud. So yesterday was her second race, and she was running at Santa Anita at 12:30 p.m. And again, she was in really deep. How deep? How about running against not one, but two Bob Baffert horses? And one of the horses was a horse named Merneith, who's a monster. And when I talk about a monster, how do you know a horse is a monster? She's never run before because of how she's bred, because of her pedigree, her lines, how much they paid for her, how well she's training, who she trains with, who her trainer is, all these things. She checks every single box. She's the daughter of American Pharoah. I mean, she's some horse now, a potential monster, like one of those horses that everybody already knew about before she'd even run. It's like any other athlete. Believe me, you know about the great ones. And everybody had been talking about her. And we're running against her. So I know some wise guys. Not many, but I know a couple. And some sharps. And they were saying to me, yo, Rome, you got yourself a nice little jungle horse there, Rome. Got yourself a nice little horse. But what the hell are you thinking putting her in against Baffert? What are you doing running that horse in that spot? Aren't you supposed to run them where they can win? Is that something you really want to do? This is not the race for her. Could probably run her in a softer spot and maybe get her a win. And I'm like, And the worst part is, I thought there was something in what they were saying. You know, by putting her in this race, what happens is, when you put a horse like that that's never won and that's young in against that talent, the risk you run is, not only does she get beaten, but it damages her confidence. Like any athlete with a bad beatdown. It damages everybody's confidence. And I got to admit, these guys, these sharps, these old school guys, they were kind of in my head. They know that when you win, like the horses, they know when they win and they know when they lose. I get that a lot. Hey, man, do they even know? They know. They know. They know when they win, they know when they lose, and they know when they get hammered, like any athlete. And it can't affect their confidence. So, point of this whole thing is, the old saying is, either you win or you learn. And my thought was, maybe we'll learn. Maybe we'll learn. Maybe it'll be good for her. I hope she has a good experience. But she's not going to win. But, as a wise guy would have said, what the hell is she doing in there running against Merneith, who was going off at 1-9? That's the other thing. That one horse in the one post was 1-9. 1-9. What are you doing running her against a horse that's 1-9? I'll tell you what we were doing running against a horse that was 1-9.
The field heads around the far turn. Merneith lets it out a notch, leads now by 2.5 lengths. Gidgetta joined by Ream on the outside, Ream taking second. Then Drama for Mama and Princess Mo. They're a quarter of a mile from home. Merneith in front by 1.5 lengths. Ream takes up the chase on the outside of Gidgetta. 3/16 to go. Merneith now asked to run, leads by 1.5 lengths still. Gidgetta is game between rivals and Ream on the outside. 1/16 to run. Merneith just in front. Gidgetta's going to make her work. Gidgetta's coming to Merneith now, and Gidgetta runs her down. It will be Gidgetta to score. Merneith was second.
What was she doing? She was winning the damn race. Our girl got up. She ran down a great, great talent in the Baffert barn. So it's not just that she won, but it's how she won. I mean, she was beaten. If you've seen the video, if you watch these types of things, like our gal, she was beaten. She lost. She was beaten. I genuinely thought that race was over. And I was thinking to myself, Come on, baby. Hold on. Just get that second place money. Hold on. It's a good experience. We're so proud. Hold on. Wait, what? Like, I can't explain it. Like, she found another gear. She dug deep. And I can't say anything other than it was really surreal. Like, I was shaken by the whole thing. Literally and physically shaking when it was over. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was shaking. Complete goosebumps. Like, I'm getting them again just talking about it right now. Like, we've won Breeders' Cup races, plural. We've won grade one stake races. We own the top thoroughbred in the world in shared belief. I was in my office shaking after a maiden win. And that's not exaggerating the fact. Like, I really thought we had no shot. I really thought she was beaten in the race. I thought that if we hit the board, maybe come in second place, that's a good day. Maybe we'd learn something. We did learn something about this one. We learned that she's got the heart of a champion. Again, not that she won, but how she won. How deep she dug. And the grit and the heart that she showed. Because it would have been so much easier for her to lose that race. It would have been so much easier for her just to give up and get dusted. But she never did, man. She gutted it out. Gutted it out and showed so much heart in coming back. And she won by a length. Like, that's a sport that's given us some extraordinary moments with misdirection and shared belief. Some extraordinary pain and heartbreak. But I'm going to say yesterday was right up there with one of the best moments I've ever experienced in horse racing. Literally. A homebred horse running down an extremely talented horse that had been training extremely well that everybody loves. I mean, that was an amazing moment. And look, here's the thing. I want to be clear about this too. Just because Gidgetta beat Merneith doesn't mean anything going forward. She could come up against that same horse again and get run right off the track. Literally. It would not surprise me at all. But for that moment in time, that was one of the most emotional and sweetest wins we've ever had. To have that happen with one of our own, our little jungle racing homebred, running between Baffert horses. By the way, I work with Bob. I'm partners in a horse that Bob trains. So that's the weird thing about that game, right? I'm running against Bob, and she's running her eyeballs out, and we want to win, but I do business with Bob on another horse. But our little homebred running between Baffert horses and then running down a $600,000 Baffert horse was absolutely surreal. And again, they may run us right off the track next time. I've got no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen going forward, but I already love Gidgetta before that race, no matter what. And I love her even more after seeing that kind of grit. You love to see a horse run with that kind of heart against anybody, but to do it against a horse that has much class as the others did is really something special. Like Merneith, that was her first race. I want to be clear about that too. That was only her first race, and Gidgetta already had a race under her belt. And Merneith is going to be unbelievable. She's going to win some enormous races. I don't know if Gidgetta ever wins another race, but nobody can take that from her or that moment from the jungle racing family. We've won huge races. That was not a huge race. But I would be hard-pressed to say I've ever felt better in the game than I did after that win. That was goosebumps. That was so personal. That was neat. So if you were at the track and you saw that, we appreciate the support. And the most important thing after a race like that is, how did the horse come out? She apparently came out very good. Happy, was eating. That's always the first sign. If they eat a lot after the race, that means they felt great. Legs were cold, which is great. So now she gets some time off, and we'll see. But that was fun. It was good to have jungle racing back in the winner's circle. We have not had that in a long, long time. So big ups to Richard Baltus and his staff for having her ready. Joel Rosario with a great ride. And a really nice win. Gidgetta, I'm proud of you, little girl. 1-800-636-8686. I would thank you, clones, for indulging me, but I was going to do that no matter what. I told James Kelly I'd do that. I told D-Dub I would do that. They're both big jungle racing people. When we come back, we'll talk some football. Will that make you feel better? Kyle Shanahan is my topic. Phone lines are open. Hit us up. I will be at Torrey Pines tomorrow. The Farmers Insurance Open. Pat Perez already booked. And a number of other golfers will stop by our setup. Looking forward to getting back to San Diego. That's where it all started. First up, I got a sports update. Here's the very late. And live tomorrow from Torrey Pines. Farmers Insurance Open. Great event. Great track. Great tournament. And we will be broadcasting live the entire program. No TV simulcast tomorrow, all radio. And some really good sit-down interviews. Pat Perez will be there. If you haven't heard Pat, you want to make sure you hear Pat. He's one of the best. One of the best to talk to in any sport. And some other big ones, too, which I will get to momentarily. Last chance to get through, if you're looking to do so. Also tomorrow, Charlie Hoffman, Tony Finau, Rex Hoggard, and on the phones, my guy Jocko. Jocko Willink. He's got a brand new book out. He had an LA appearance last night, in fact. So Jocko will join me on the phones, and those golfers and one journo on the program tomorrow. Hawk and I will be at Torrey Pines. Pretty excited about that, Adam. So I got the Montana Bowl reference out of the way yesterday. It's been banned. Don't bring it up again. The Montana Bowl, KC and Frisco. May as well get this out of the way as well. Get all your 28-3 jokes out. Because my guess is 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan has already heard all of them. You don't need to ask him if he remembers Super Bowl 51 against the Pats, because he does. He was the offensive coordinator of the Falcons. That was a nightmare of a Super Bowl, not because of how it ended, but because of how it started. Remember, that was the year he lost his backpack in media night, a backpack that had his iPad with the entire game plan on it, as well as nearly 50 Super Bowl tickets and, quote, a lot of cash for those tickets. You want to talk about a nightmare? After 90 minutes of searching for it, it was eventually tracked down. Man, can you imagine what those 90 minutes must have been like? The playbook, game plan floating around, all those tickets, all that cash. He got it back, but by then you could tell that was not a good omen. You know it's a bad week when you misplace the most valuable backpack in the world. And it's not even the worst thing that happened to you all week long. Because what happened on Sunday with that 28-3 lead was even worse. So, of course, he was asked about it yesterday and asked how often he thinks about what happened that night.
Not much at all anymore, to tell you the truth. I mean, you do it every second. I mean, the days after were real tough. Losing a Super Bowl is extremely tough for everybody, especially when you lose one when you have a 28-3 lead going into the fourth.
Right. And he had more on that subject because he knows that there's more out there. He's not trying to ignore what happened. He lived with it and he's dealt with it.
You know, but the way it came down on me personally, you know, I didn't react to that, I think, the way people would expect, because, you know, there's definitely parts in that Super Bowl that I would love to have back and stuff I was very hard on myself. But, you know, the whole narrative of if I just would have ran it, we would have won. I know that wasn't the case. I know what went into that game and all the stuff that happened. So that stuff didn't bother me. I mean, you got to deal with that and listen to other people. But it was nice to be able to move on and move out here and just keep working. And I'm glad I'm going to get the chance to go back.
You know, honestly, that's a bad deal. That's a bad deal that he's handled as well as you possibly could. And to listen to him right now, that sounds like he's actually handled it, dealt with it, internalized it, and moved beyond it, and learned from it. And you still learn from it, because at 2nd and 11, that call at the New England 23, with just under 4 minutes to go, and a 28-20 lead, he called a pass because he remembered an earlier play in the game where he called a run, and it didn't work. And because the offense hadn't really picked up a third down for most of the second half. So he went with a pass instead of a run. The pass didn't work either. In fact, it was a complete disaster. Matt Ryan was sacked for a 12-yard loss. The Falcons chased out with a holding penalty on the very next play. And then the implosion was on.
That put us way back, and he had to throw again to get back into it, and we missed it. But yeah, I wish I didn't call that play on 2nd and 11 that led to that sack.
Right. And if you think the 49ers were aggressive with their lead against the Packers and were looking to put the pedal to the metal when they had the chance, you'd be right. Because according to Shanahan, that all also goes back to 28-3.
That's why I promise you, when we're way up in the fourth quarter on Green Bay and stuff, I mean, I know what 28-3 is, and I know 25-point lead in the fourth quarter isn't enough. So when we only have a 14-point lead with 8 minutes to go versus Green Bay, I can promise you that I think I feel from experience like the game is tied and that we don't have a 2-score lead.
I want to say this too. For all the heat that Kyle Shanahan gets about 28-3, it was not his side of the ball that allowed 25 straight points. I mean, sure, he'd like to have a couple of those play calls back. But I'm guessing the Falcons defense would like to have the entire second half back. So here are a couple of things to keep in mind as you get ready for the Super Bowl and you've got all those really witty and smart things that you're going to go with at your Super Bowl party. Kyle Shanahan knows about 28-3. He knows everything about 28-3. And if he's in that spot against Kansas City, you don't need to tell him to run the ball. He already is going to be doing that. And he's got the running game to back it up. In fact, if he's up 28-3, it's probably because he had been running it all day long. And he's certainly not going to stop there. He's not the same coach he was with the Falcons. Just as importantly, this Niners team is not that Falcons team. That Falcons team was really good. This Niners team is better, much better. Now, I'm not big into predictions, but here is my Super Bowl prediction. More than a week out, there is no chance the 49ers defense allows 25 unanswered points in the second half to blow a Super Bowl. Man, take that to the bank. In fact, go ahead and bet your life on it. Bet your life on it. I'm not going to bet my life on it, but you bet your life on it. Take it to the bank. Kansas City is explosive. We know this. We know this. But that Niners defense is not allowing 25 unanswered points to come from ahead and melt down and choke away that game. Not happening. Shanahan knows 28-3. Trust me, he's gone to school on it. He's owned it. And that was not all his fault. Far from it. His unit did not allow 25 unanswered points. Have you got plans this weekend? If so, you want to make sure that you are prepared with windshield wipers that can handle anything at all. Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades are real-world proven for extreme weather performance. They last 2 times longer than other blades. New Michelin Endurance XT silicone wiper blades only available at Walmart. Quick reminder, for the last time, next time you hear me, I will be at Torrey Pines, the site of the Farmers Insurance Open. We will be right there on the track. Tony Finau, Pat Perez, Rex Hoggard, Charlie Huffman, and Jocko Willink on the phone. Hoffman. I misspoke. That'll happen. My thanks to everybody involved today. Pete Prisco made it out of Kansas City alive. Good job, Pete. See you in Miami. We had Steve Peichel, Rutgers head basketball coach. We had Kelvin Sampson in Houston. Hey, Albie, do you have a call, by the way?
One thing that really angers me is all the football announcers insisting on calling the Giants the New York Football Giants. Yeah, I know it's their legal name, but, you know, a root canal is called a pulpectomy, but nobody calls it that. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're trying to be nice to the Giants fans by making that piece of crap team, you know, take some of the stink off it. I don't know. But we don't need to know it's the New York Football Giants anymore. Last one, Pedro Martinez calling out fires for breaking the unwritten rules of baseball. Talking about a sport that insists on putting a Y at the end of every stinking name and having guys like Dickie and Bucky walking around with straight faces.
Not when you know what the answer to that question is.
Thanks, Marky. Just kidding. Mark in San Diego with a huge call. Now we're done. I already thanked my guests. Thanks to the XR4TI. Thanks, Clones. We're taking the show on the road tomorrow. See you then. Make sure you check it out. Good podcast this week also. Jorge Masvidal is going to be my guest. He needs more real estate than he got on this program. He's going to get it in the form of the Jim Rome podcast. We will push that out on Wednesday. We are in Miami next week. Lots going on this time of year. So thank you very much for listening. Have an amazing day. And I will check you tomorrow from San Diego. See you then.